Jesus Christ is risen. It's the good news all the world needs to hear, and you can help deliver the message. The Lutheran Heritage Foundation is dedicated to translating and printing the good books of our Lutheran faith so that all nations may know the love of Christ. In more than 140 languages, LHF provides Bible storybooks, small catechisms, devotion books, and more that proclaim the Easter message. Learn how you can help at lhfmissions.org.
Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Oh, it's the book club wrap-up episode we have all been waiting for months. I'm so excited for this one. Rachel, what are we doing?
We're doing Little Women.
Yes!
By Louisa May Alcott. And I don't really need to say much more than that. I mean, there have been four movie versions of a BBC miniseries. So if you are not familiar with this particular work of classic American literature, well, go read it and then come on back and listen to the rest of the episode. Now, this one is long in coming. The coming of age story of Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy March, Louisa May Alcott's four sisters, very different souls, and how they all learn to live into their own womanhood. So it's a really great book for us to talk about, being in the same way very different little women over here, who manifest our womanhood in different ways, but all beautiful ways. So this was so fun. I must say, I forgot how long the book was, and this
it's so long.
This was a common experience in our book club, partly because so many of us, our first exposure to this was in an abridged version. I still have my abridged version downstairs.
You know, I bet that was my first exposure. I didn't even realize.
Exactly. And so then you come back around and you realize, oh, this book is over 700 pages long. And here are whole chapters that I do not remember at all.
Right.
Other chapters I know so well, I could basically recite them from memory. So it was a fun experience. Like all the book I used to enjoy plus more that I never knew was there. It's great.
Yeah, it's like a 19-hour audiobook or something. That's on par with some of the really long novels that we read on road trips. I was not expecting it to be so long when I downloaded it or when I ordered the book, because you only see the cover of the book when you order it online. And it showed up in the mail, and I was like, this is 3 inches thick. What am I getting into?
Oh, man.
But once you get going, it goes pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You got to sort of find the groove and get to know the characters and start caring about what happens to them. And then all of a sudden you're at the end and it's just as lovely as you remembered it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that was my impression. Mm. Wonderful book, longer than I remember. What was your impression? Sarah, this was your first time ever reading this.
Yes, it was.
Nice. Did you enjoy it?
I did. I know a lot of people say it's like one of their favorite books, and I totally respect that. And I see how that's a thing. I don't know that I would put it on my like super favorites, I'm going to keep rereading it list. And I don't know that I can exactly tell you why. I did listen to it. And one of my friends was like, it's probably a very different experience listening to it than reading it. Just some of the parts, the things that happen in the book may hit a lot differently. And I mean, that's true for any book that you read versus listening to, but part of me wants to go back and actually read, like physically read the book and see if it's a little bit different, if I connect to it differently. I really enjoyed the story in general, especially into the second half of the book. The first part of it, when they're girls, when the women are girls, I don't know how else to say that, when they're younger, that part felt very slow to me. And maybe because I didn't read it as a girl. If I read it when I was a kid, that may have been the part that was like a lot more familiar because of the age that I would be reading it. But reading it as an adult, that part just felt, I didn't really feel like I could connect to it. But once they started getting into adulthood, that's when it really picked up for me. When Amy's story was a little bit more fleshed out and when Joe was, you know, deciding who she was going to marry, like all of that stuff when they were getting into adulthood. That's when I really started enjoying it. But I mean, overall, I'm glad I read it. Now I actually, now I know what happens, which is really fun. I didn't really know anything about the storyline at all, other than who the characters were and sort of kind of what they were like. And that was about it. So yeah, I'm glad we did it. So I started reading Anne of Green Gables immediately after I finished Little Women, because those were the two books in our last book club episode that I was like, I've never read these and people keep telling me I should read them. So I was like, well, I did Little Women. Now I got to do Anne of Green Gables. And honestly, I like Anne of Green Gables better, but I just love Anne. She's my brain. Her talking is what my brain sounds like. So, but yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this today. I think it's going to be super fun.
Nice. So I'm one of those that read it. I've read it more than once in my life. This was not like my second time reading it. I'm not sure how many times I've read it. This might have been the third time, could have been the fourth, something along those lines. I'm pretty sure, I don't remember the first time I read it. I'm pretty sure, though, that my mom read it to me. Okay. It was probably, she read it aloud to me and my sister. There's a solid chance that was the case. I did notice, I don't know, I noticed different things this time, because I'm not sure when, the last time I read it, if I was an adult. If I was still a fairly young adult. So I think it's probably been 20 years since I read it, at least. Anyway, so it hit differently this time, having read it as an adult. And I sort of feel like, Sarah, some of what makes Little Women so beloved is the fact that, like, I think most of the time we are introduced to that book as children. Yeah. And I think it does resonate differently when you're reading it as a child. Because also, like, the first part of the whole, I don't know, first two thirds of the book, it sounds like you would have been like, that is your life. You are very much identifying directly with it. And then you're still willing to follow along when they get older, because you've already identified so closely with the girls as children. But as if you flip it as an adult and read it for the first time, then I can absolutely see how it would be like, I mean, it's good, but it's
I think that's probably what it was.
I think that's part of it, as far as, I assume that part of her intended audience was young women. And I think she did a great job with writing to that target audience.
Yeah.
I did still enjoy it. I do still like Little Men more, which is the sequel.
I need to read that one.
There's actually a third one that I don't like as much. So Little Men, the middle book in a surprising twist, is in my, you know, it's my favorite. So yeah, but it's fun. It somehow, it's not just a recreation of Little Women, but let's put in boys instead. It's a different approach to that. And I've just always enjoyed it more, but this is still an excellent book. And it's had some great conversation, and it did give me I did think much more about the adult stories this time, Sarah, like you were saying, like that's where you started really getting engaged. And I did spend a lot more time contemplating that this time than I have in the past. And also what I did hear a lot of people discussing in the Facebook event book club discussion, Amy's character it was a more interesting character than I remember her being. And so I also enjoyed that as my takeaway this time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
This for me was the first time I've read it in a number of years. I've tried starting it. I made it several chapters in, reading it out loud to my girls. They did not like it. They will not read it. And I don't quite know why, because they love Louisa May Alcott's Eight Cousins and its sequel, Rose and Bloom. That one they adored, but they can't get into Little Women. So I have not read it in a number of years for myself. What struck me this reading was not how much I love the book, because I'm kind of with both of you. I like it a lot, but it's not my favorite book, and it's not even my favorite Alcott book. That would be an old-fashioned girl. But what I did realize this time around was how very formative this was for me. When I read it as an adolescent, I look back and I see, so much of who I was and my life choices at that time were shaped by this book. My understanding of what it means to be a woman was in some sense shaped by this book. What it means to live a rich, fulfilling life was very shaped by this book. And I don't think I'd ever quite given it that credit before, that in some sense, I was raised by my parents, but I was also raised by my books.
Yeah.
And this was one of those that helped to raise me. So it was neat to go back and revisit it and see that influence and how that's played out. Now it's still actually playing out in my life.
Yeah.
All right. We should talk about actually some of the questions, the discussion questions that we delved into this week on Facebook. And Sarah, you said that we wanted this episode to not just touch on like three questions and be done. You really wanted to talk about all of these questions. So if there's we can be so like brief about it, I'm going to allow it. I think we should, because there's some really interesting topics. We've already sort of covered question one, what kind of little fan are... Sorry, I can't talk. Question one, what kind of Little Women fan are you? But I think the most fun and one of the things that makes this book so appealing is question two, which Little Woman are you?
Yeah.
This is one thing that I spent lots of time looking in the mirror as a young person and going, which one am I? Because they are all such different expressions of young womanhood, and they all have appealing sides to them. They all have negative sides to them. And it inspires young women to look at themselves and say, which one am I? It's like a Cosmo quiz in a book. Except Cosmo quiz, don't actually read Cosmo, but you know what I mean. a Brio quiz in a book.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
where you get to do some self-discovery as you read. So which little woman are you guys?
This was complicated for me anyway.
Yeah. Well, I would say that I'm probably mostly a Joe with some Amy tossed in, but not at all in the tomboy. I've never been a tomboy. That was never my mode, but more in the, I don't know, the like unwillingness to go with exactly like the expected way. Yeah. And, you know, the insistence on doing it your own, not necessarily just independence, but almost like a defiance sort of element there. I also resonate with some of her struggles with like her temper and things like that. So those are things that I also can see. Amy, I love, well, we'll get to that later. So I don't need to go into it in great depth now, because we're going to talk about all these characters in more depth later. But I would say I'm probably mostly a combination. I'm primarily Joe with a little bit of Amy thrown in there would be probably what I would say.
And I'm the flip side of that. I am primarily Amy with a little bit of Joe thrown in there, because I was a tomboy when I was a kid. And I think if I was trying to think of who I would have related to if I read this as a kid. And I think probably Joe, because I had two older brothers. I grew up doing lots of quote boy activities. I was into like every sport when I was a child and like refused to be a girly girl. 100%. I did not want to be that girl. But then I grew up and in adulthood, I have like embraced this frilly pink version of my own womanhood. And so reading it as an adult, like the child Amy is a little like I kind of resonate with her, because I'm also a youngest child and I totally get being like the really annoying younger sister.
You can feel yourself being annoying while you're being annoying.
Yeah. You can ask my brothers how annoying I was when I was a little kid. So like I'm sure that was definitely part of my childhood. But like the older Amy that is very artsy and loves beautiful things, like that's definitely part of my personality. Realizing that like she actually does want to be married for love, not necessarily for money, and like discovering all these things about herself, like that discovery process that she goes through when she's in Europe feels very familiar. Of like when I graduated from college and was living in Chicago, and like all of a sudden, I shouldn't say all of a sudden, through a process, like was really discovering who I was as my own person. Because as the youngest child, sometimes you don't actually know your own person because of how you're pulled in a lot of different directions as a kid. At least that was my experience. But that like coming of age felt really familiar to me, and like really realizing who you were and
what you really wanted out of life. So I think definitely like the frilly, girly girl, slightly vain Amy, definitely with like the touch of tomboy. Mm-hmm. Like I still like doing stuff that isn't necessarily quote female. Yeah, you know, I ride my bike to work. That's not like, I can't do that in a dress, but nope. I do have pink clothes. So, you know, it's a nice combination. I'm wearing like all pink today. So
I was very much a Joe when I was younger. Very bookwormish, very gawky. My hair was my one beauty. Mm-hmm. I was not a beautiful girl. And I kind of knew it.
You still have beautiful hair. Oh.
Many, many of my good friends were guys, and I tended to get along better with them. The girls didn't really know what to do with me. So when I read this book as a teenager, it was really, really wonderful to see, okay, I feel like even though she lived 100 years, 150 years before me, she sees me and represents me. And then to see, oh, Joe grew up to be a lovely, strong woman with a happy marriage and beautiful children. And that just because you are that gawky, more brains than beauty young woman doesn't mean that all of this goodness is off limits to you. And then as I grew up, I did turn into more of a Meg. I married kind of young, had kids kind of young, became much more domestic in my habits. And I can even relate to Amy with her, you know, people-pleasing nature.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely, 100%.
Absolutely.
That is my life.
I am currently, the little woman I am right now is Marmee.
Mm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And when I grow up, finally, I will either, if I'm very good, turn into Beth. And if I'm not very good, Aunt March.
Mm-hmm.
It really could go either way at this point.
Oh, Aunt March.
Oh, yes. Yep. So I love being able to think through these questions. Am I still the little woman I was the last time I read this book? And every time I've read it, the answer has been a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. Now, one of the questions that I had wanted most to ask about this book is the next one on the list. And that is this a Christian book? There are so many elements of faith that are woven through this. The girls are trying to live out Pilgrim's Progress in their own life. Their mother gives them little books for Christmas, which are obviously New Testaments.
I was annoyed that they never said they were actual Bibles. I was like, oh, this is obviously a Bible.
This is so obviously a Bible. You sit and read out of it every morning for your moral edification. Uh-huh. This is so a Bible. I love the scene where Joe witnesses Friedrich Baer, who will eventually become her husband, in this conversation with a bunch of like philosophy nerds, and then launching into this very vehement and intelligent defense of the existence of God. And this is one of the moments where Joe realizes, okay, this guy is something special.
Yeah.
He's just apologetically defending the existence of God in mixed company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so there are so many wonderful elements to this. And of course, it is a deeply moral book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But would we call it Christian?
Well, yeah. This is one of the things that I definitely noticed much more as an adult reader of it. I think as a young reader of it, I just colored in the blanks of, clearly it's Christian. I would say it's not a Christian book as in like a book written to make people Christian.
Yeah.
It's not a Christianizing book. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is. I mean, it's clearly written it's very moralistic. It's very moralistic, but there's a lot of morals in the Bible. And so I also don't want to like dismiss that, but there's scant grace in this book.
Yeah.
This book is heavy law.
It's pietism like, through and through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
like one little section in there, I think when Beth was ill, that seemed to be gospel, but all the rest of it was not.
How to live the right way.
Well, when Beth is ill the first time, there is this conversation about, you know, you'll go to heaven if you're good enough.
Right. Yeah. No, not that. There's a later conversation. There was a later conversation that's, I believe, brought in an actual Bible verse from, I think maybe it was Corinthians. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I'm like, OK, I think I'm actually hearing gospel. It was so brief.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is no Jesus in this book.
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. No. Which makes me classify it as not a Christian book. It is a book with mostly Christian moral. I shouldn't say mostly. It's a book with Christian morals. But like, if you read this book as not a Christian, you're not going to be offended.
Yeah.
Because there really isn't that much talk of God in it.
I'm like, why is that? Why did she seem to dance around so much of it? Like she'll quote Pilgrim's Progress left and right, but she never actually calls out, like, again, these actual Bible stories.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, read this for the model of the best man you could ever follow, but let's not say the name Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just made me a little puzzled. It wasn't what I feel like I always hear about the good old days when we used to talk about these things so freely and this was the way life always was and now is when it's so hard. And yet here we have this book
that doesn't say Jesus at all.
In these so-called good old days. And indeed, it doesn't, never says Jesus. And it's all law. And it just makes me, I'm always willing to question the
God. Well, I think one key to understanding this puzzle is that Alcott's own family was kind of on the fringes of Christian faith, that her father was they were on the Transcendentalist Unitarian side of things.
Mm. And that shows through.
Yeah, it does. And Christian, I think she understood the world that she was writing for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gave her freedom to be a little bit more committal than she would otherwise have been with her faith convictions.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you see a lot of respect for the Bible.
Yeah.
But not a lot of deep, you know, Christian faith, which is sad to me. And I think I took it with a grain of salt when I was a kid, but reading back through the book this time, it just makes me sad. How can someone know the Bible, know hymnody, know Pilgrim's Progress so well, and yet obviously not be letting them all sink in in a way that is really, really obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of me was like, are these good little books actually the Bible?
Yeah. I'm like, did they each get their own copy of the Pilgrim's Progress? And that's what it was?
Yeah. But that's what I thought when I was a kid. But no, I'm fairly sure it's a Testament.
I think you're right.
I think it is. But there were several times when I was reading that I was deeply questioning what they actually were reading.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it a Christian book? No, not really.
Not really.
But it's not one, I think, that gets in the way of Christian faith. It's not going to undermine your faith, especially if you've been well catechized to know that Jesus has saved you from your sins.
Yes.
And in fact, it can reinforce and sort of, for me at least, as a young person, it normalized Christian values and behavior in a way that made it not seem weird to want to live in a self-sacrificial way or not seem weird to behave modestly and not be a terrible flirt. Or, you know, like there are certain ways in which it really reinforced what my parents were teaching me about the Christian life, but it would never do just on its own to teach you about what it means to be a Christian. Speaking of ways in which the book reads differently nowadays than it did 30 years ago, let's go to question number 4. What are we to make of Tomboy Joe?
Yeah.
So this was very different for me reading it this time around. When I was a kid, it just all seemed like, she's a tomboy. She likes to do boy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She's a girl,
but
she's a tomboy.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, all that language with the conversation that has been going on in our country about gender identity, all that language felt weird and wrong.
Yeah.
In a way that it never did before.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Joe as a gentleman or Joe in her boyish voice or Joe, you know, any of that. And it just, it made me physically uncomfortable. This character whom I've loved for so long The language itself was rough for me. But let me ask you, how did it strike you?
It was uncomfortable because a lot of the language that she uses is so similar to the language that comes out of the trans movement. And I mean, I knew where Louisa May Alcott was coming from, and I knew the character that she was building. And I know that I identified as a tomboy as a kid and kind of still do. And knowing how Joe ends up as an adult makes it less uncomfortable. But I didn't know that at the beginning.
This was your first time through.
So, I mean, I could kind of assume what was going to happen because of the time period that this was written. But it was definitely making me stop. I would like twitch a little at some of the language.
Yes.
Just because it's so, I hate using the word triggering, but it's so triggering to what our conversations are today and how people can't really talk about a girl doing boy things without it being like, oh no, be careful. But like, so it's hard to talk and normalize a girl doing maybe not feminine things in a way that's actually acceptable. Maybe that makes sense.
Yeah, I hear exactly what you guys are saying. And I did have a couple of moments where I'm like, oh, I didn't quite remember. I didn't quite remember like, oh, we're going to actually call you, oh, fellow and things like that. Yeah. Where it's like
man of the house when father's away.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, I also appreciated because today I feel like you're right that if we were reading this story today and that were the language that was being portrayed, everything is coding it that this person is going to declare at some point that, oh no, I'm changing my gender.
Yeah.
And yet I appreciated the fact that as I'm reading it and I'm seeing, you know, all of this and this her love of boyish things, that fact of it never questioned the fact that she was still female, that she was still a woman.
Yeah.
Like that was like it was understood that it could be both. Like you can love boyish things that doesn't call into question your female identity.
Right.
And now I feel like today we do, like we make that a question, like can this be part of, like is your identity at stake? And that was not an undertone of this story at all. Like that was never, she never went there. She never like considered it or anything like that. It was just this is who Joe is as she's growing up and she becomes a woman who still does not conform to all of the typical, you know, so-called feminine ideals and that sort of thing, and is still a woman, a, you know, good wife. Anyway, so I also appreciated that aspect of it. Like it's a bit of a, I don't know, it's a bit refreshing.
Yeah.
To be able to allow that, oh, people can have these complexities in their character and that does not change their foundational identity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's where I came out on that question.
Yeah, because Rachel, part of your question was, is Joe a good role model for girls today? And I think that's exactly what you're saying, Erin, that I end up appreciating is that like you can be a girl and like playing with dump trucks. Like that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're
yeah.
still a girl, even if you like playing with the dump trucks and the blue Lego and like stuff that maybe boys would play with.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're not a girl. And I resonate with that heavily because
you
I grew up.
Pursue a somewhat masculine career,
go
writing
for it.
And things like that.
Yeah.
It is still, you're still a girl.
Yep. Like I grew up wearing my brother's hand-me-down clothes, but that doesn't make me a boy just because I was wearing my brother's means that I was wearing hand-me-down clothes and playing with the stuff that they liked to play with. So like part of the reason it's sensitive is because that was my childhood partly. So
Well, and I gotta say, this question forced me to reflect and realize I really needed Joe when I was younger.
Yeah.
And it may be that there are a lot of girls today that still need Joe to be able to see. So you're not a girly girl. You're not pretty. It's okay.
Right.
You're not going to be the first. Well, I guess she was almost the first who got a marriage proposal. But you know, the first young woman the guys notice, unless it's as a friend. But there's space for you, and it's beautiful.
Yep.
So I'm glad the character of Joe March exists.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But what are we going to do with character of Amy March? So this was so funny. I kind of knew this would happen because this is mirrors my own experience. When I asked the question, which little woman are you? Sarah, you are about the only person to say I'm Amy. Everybody else was, I'm Joe with a little Meg. I'm Meg with a little Joe.
Right.
Nobody wanted to identify with Amy.
Uh-huh.
And those that did would often say something like, well, I'm kind of like Amy in this way, but
yeah,
I'm not completely Amy. Why is it that we have trouble identifying with her? Why is it that some people come right out and say, I didn't like her?
Mm. Uh-huh.
Amy March, the unlikable March sister. What's going on there?
In my reading of the book, and I may have missed stuff because this was only my first time through it, I feel like there's two main reasons maybe. One is that I feel like she's so young at mm-hmm. the beginning through a lot of the first part of the story that we just don't get to connect with her as much as the other three. I didn't feel like she showed up a whole lot until like at least halfway through the book. And maybe I was just missing stuff because I was...
She's just the annoying kid sister.
Yeah. Like we don't really get to know her at all until she gets a lot more into adulthood. And by that point, you've already connected so much with the other three that you just don't really know a lot. And I think she's the one that has the most obvious and flagrant faults, I feel like. Mm. Like the whole, like, she can't talk right and she never knows what words to say and she's super vain and she's really annoying. And maybe I was just identifying with that a lot. But like her faults are quite obvious at the beginning. And she kind of grows out of some of that as an adult. Mm. But I don't know. That's my opinion. I really do like her character.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciated her, like I said, much more this time, this reading, than I have in the past. I agree. At the beginning, she is the youngest. And I was trying to sort of figure out, like, what is the age gap, do you think? Is it basically one year between each?
So, yeah. Or, no, Joe and Meg and Joe are like 16, 17 or 15, 16 when the book starts. Maybe 15, 16. Beth is 13 and Amy
is she like
11 or 12?
Oh, is she? Okay.
Okay. Okay. So
there is an age gap between the older girls and the younger.
And that's, again, at that age, it's more significant. And so she does catch up with them eventually.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they made, to an extent, I feel like in many ways, Beth is the least developed character. Like, we don't really get her inner life at all.
That's true.
Yeah. And she doesn't get any flaws. She's got no flaws except maybe she's too shy.
Yeah,
oh,
like
no. like the sweet girl that everyone loves is just too shy. Oh.
Yeah. Yep.
But she got no flaws at all. She got to just be the angel that dies young and, you know, makes everyone want to be better.
Yep.
What is, that's fine. That's a noble calling too, I suppose. But Amy, you're right. She does have some flaws. I feel like in many ways, Joe has as many flaws. We just like her more.
Right. We know
and
her more.
So you're right. But also she's again, as you said, like she's older. And so it's easier to identify with her. She's not as much of a child. So yeah, Amy, though, indeed, the whole progression of her and even before she went to Europe, to the continent or whatever it is, she got to have her. I did not realize in my first memory of this that she was gone for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like 3 years.
But that was a big deal. But you could even see before that, like the maturing of Amy and growing into a much more thoughtful person. And it's not necessarily all people pleaser or wanting people to like her.
Although compared to Joe, it definitely is.
But that was one of Joe's flaws. Like that cost her the trip to Europe was the fact that she was like, I hate the idea of accepting anything from anyone.
And yep.
I think that's just the worst.
And, and she got what she wanted.
Anyway, I did. I liked Amy much more so. And the fact that she had to grow up so much. They all did. That was another thing that I, again, apparently just forgot. The fact that they, like, Marmy had gone off to nurse the wounded father while Beth was so ill. And so they were all just sort of struggling alone.
Yeah.
Was another aspect that I had forgotten. So Amy was there with Aunt March and just trying to figure out how to live. She's the youngest. She's anyway, just sent away.
Yeah. I never liked Amy when I was younger. Again, because she was this polished, artsy, sophisticated young woman that I felt was completely out of reach for me. I shared Joe's poor impulse control and foot and mouth syndrome. Definitely. I would have lost a trip to Europe just like that. But this time through, what I saw about Amy that I really loved is her growth.
Yeah.
So many of the characters in this book are kind of static. Like Marmee at the beginning, Marmee at the end, kind of the same person, which I don't really believe is possible because if I look at how much I've grown throughout my children's teenage years, she's a useful foil and conversation partner, but she doesn't really grow as a character.
Yeah.
Beth, you mentioned, doesn't really grow as a character. Meg grows a little, but she's kind of the same person at the end as she is at the beginning. Joe and Amy both grow a lot. And of the two, I think Amy grows more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really enjoy her as a character much more. I think for me, the turning point this time was seeing her when she shuttled off to Aunt March's house during Beth's scarlet fever and her conversations with Esther, the French maid, and how she sets up a little prayer closet for herself tries to spend some time every day in prayer for her sister. Doesn't want to be too Catholic about it. She wants to find a good Protestant way to copy Esther's French Catholic religious piety.
But
she really begins to sort of take ownership of her own spiritual development at that time. And I just loved that. And we see that continuing, that process that has begun during what had to be a very hard moment in any young woman's life, shunted off away from your family because your sister might die. And you might catch it, and then you might die, and then sent to live with a cranky old relative when you have nobody around you. But in this moment, we start to see Amy become a more richly developed, spiritually aware young woman, and that continues throughout the rest of the book, and it's really cool to see. Yeah. I really like that. Maybe I do want to be Amy.
I think that's because she's the youngest child, and when you're the youngest child, you tend to get overlooked by a lot of stuff, and so you kind of end up being, like I said, not your own person. So then when she goes and has to be herself in a different house, she actually has that space to figure out who she actually might be, because there is nobody, like she is the only kid in that house then. So there is no other influence. She just gets to figure stuff out for herself in a way that she couldn't when she's surrounded by her siblings.
I did also really enjoy the story where she wanted to throw this party for her friends.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that. Oh.
She had a vision for how to do it. And she was like, I know you want me. You're like, you think it's too expensive. She's like, I'm going to pay for it all. So I want to do it the way I want to do it.
I love that
and
story.
She did it. And it was mostly a failure. And she took it so gracefully.
Yeah.
Which was also like very, like she did not take herself too seriously, which she did earlier. So again, you see that she is like, okay, well, it didn't go the way I expected, but I will still entertain the one friend who came.
Yeah.
And we will then all eat ice cream for days. So anyway, I enjoyed that. I thought that was another one of those pieces where you could see her growing and learning and changing from the selfish, very self-centered character that she had been to being like, well, okay, my idea didn't work and oh well.
Yeah.
I think we see the culmination of her growth as a woman in the very last scene where they're all apple picking out at Plumfield, Joe's boys' school. And we see Amy with their one child, little Beth, who's a very sickly creature. So Amy and Lori end up with a special needs baby.
Yep.
And that anxiety, but also that love and the sacrifice that comes with that. Both of these young people who started out being, let's face it, very selfish and spoiled.
Yes.
Have the opportunity to really outgrow it and give of themselves to each other and to their baby. And it's just really beautiful to see that sort of arc complete mm-hmm. at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a subtle little thing, but it meant a lot to me.
Yeah. And I will say, oh, wait, no, we're getting to it. I won't spoil it. Never mind.
Okay. What are we getting to, Sarah?
I was going to say that I'm really happy that Amy ended up with Lori, but I know that's...
Okay, let's just go there right now.
Okay.
Mm. We need to go there.
We mm-hmm. do.
One question I was also dying to ask in this book club discussion. Should Joe and Lori, the besties throughout childhood, should they have gotten married? Joe turned him down.
No.
More than once. And it's really hard because you go back and you look at their relationship. You look at all the dialogue. The reason we like Joe more than Amy, honestly, is because of her friendship with Lori and yeah. watching the conversations between mm-hmm. them and how they're both so loving and clever yeah. and interesting. She's never more interesting than when she's talking to Lori.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the chemistry is so undeniable there, the friendship chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she turned him down and he yep. married her sister. How do we feel about that, ladies?
I'm totally fine with that.
They're too similar.
They are. You can work really well as friends, but marriage is a whole different ballgame. Like, you got to be able to work through stuff in a way different way than if you're just friends, in my personal opinion. I think that Lori and Amy offset each other. I was just having this conversation with my husband about how, like, our different, like, we're similar enough that we like the same things, mm-hmm. but we're different in ways that complement each other so that we work really well as a team, because stuff that I'm good at and the thing, how I work through process is completely opposite from how he does. Mm-hmm. So, like, Amy and Lori are different in the right ways to work well together. Joe and Lori are just far too similar. Like, could it have worked? Yeah, of course. Like, you can make stuff work if you want to, but I like the storyline the way that it is, which I don't always. Mm-hmm. I'm mad at Anne of Green Gables right now, but I haven't gotten to the end of book three where apparently other things happened. Anyway, sorry.
You won't be mad forever.
Okay, no. That's what I figure, but boy, I'm really mad right now. Anyway.
She draws it out a lot longer than Louisa does.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I agree. And I appreciated that she didn't, I don't know, I feel like she didn't give Joe any regrets. So yeah. like when they did arrive home and lo and behold, they're married, there wasn't any like Joe suddenly like, oh, huh. It does still, I will also though say, it does still feel a little weird. Like I agree that Joe and Lori were not necessarily an ideal pairing. And as you said, you can make things work if you want to make them work, but she didn't want to make it work. So, okay, that's fine. But I do feel like it's a little weird that then he married Amy.
Yeah.
Like the sister.
I did feel that. Like, oh, I can't have one, so I'm just going to have the other one. Like, if
it does feel just a little bit like, oh, well, I'll just move on
to the next one.
At least she may. I mean, it's very clear throughout, though, as we were just talking, that Joe and Amy are completely different people. It's mm-hmm. not just like a, yeah. well, I'll take the second best.
Yeah,
I'll take her polar opposite.
Yeah.
wasn't it Lori that, am I remembering this wrong, that Lori was the one that promised to visit Amy every day at Aunt March's, though, when she had to be uh-huh. there?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There is some yeah. foreshadowing no, going did. On there
and,
that,
I mean,
that he cares about her right, in some right. way.
He cares about all of them. Like, yeah. he, like, it's not like he was only friends with Joe.
Right.
Like, he was definitely friends and loved the whole family, but it does still feel... I don't know. That part does yeah. still feel a bit weird to have, like, not even just, oh, I loved the one, but I asked her multiple times to marry me. And then she finally sent me off to Europe. And so I married again. It does. That part feels weird. It doesn't feel weird that Joe and Lori did not end up together.
Yeah,
I'm fine with that. But the whole marrying Amy, even though I agree, she's a good match for him, the fact that she and Joe are sisters.
Yeah, that's the weird part.
That's the weird part. It's the weird part is that the, yeah, everything that led up to that.
I'm glad it happened like thousands of miles away. That geographic distance and the time
uh-huh. yeah,
that uh-huh. they had both been removed, completely removed yeah. from, you know, their normal homes and relationships when this relationship was blossoming. For me, that made it slightly less weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, but even before that,
I also recall that Joe was like, oh, I think Beth is probably in love with Lori. So maybe if I go off to New York, Beth will have a chance to snag him. That was a whole thing.
Yeah.
Which was also weird because, like, I thought you knew your sister. I thought Beth was the one you knew the most. Why on earth would you think she was in love with Lori and would then marry him when Beth clearly knows you? She would never do that.
Yeah. There's this whole theme of, like, oh, no, I can't be in love. And, like, the whole story, which just, it was very odd to me, but I was definitely a child who loved the idea of being in love. So, like, the whole idea of young women, like, avoiding being in love was very weird to me. In the entire story, I just...
Well, another thing that really changed for me reading this as a teenager versus as an adult. As a teenager, I was very disappointed with Joe falling in love with Friedrich Bear.
Oh, I loved that. That was my favorite love story.
Because he just seemed all wrong.
Which
I like, why are you marrying, like, your dad?
Yeah.
Just wrong. But I guess as an older middle-aged woman now, it does not... One, he doesn't seem as old as he did.
Right.
40 isn't old. Yeah. I was wrong. 40 is not old.
Yeah. 40's not old.
But two, I'm able to see his qualities, his character, his ability to be... Lori was able to be open with Joe, but he wasn't able to be honest with Joe.
Yeah.
Always in the same way, because he didn't quite yet know how to be honest with people. Whereas Friedrich is just always very honest with her, straightforward. Yeah. And she knows, all right, here's an important part. She knows he's as smart as her.
Yes.
Or smarter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was a problem with the Joe Lori connection.
Yes.
It's very hard for a smart woman to marry someone if she's not sure that he is her intellectual equal or superior.
Yes.
And so reading it this time, having had the whole he's an old man objection removed somewhat by life and realizing, okay, here is a man who can match her wit for wit, thought for thought, and give her something new and challenging to keep that busy mind of hers going.
Yeah.
I was much more happy with that this time.
And I mean, I agree. I also think that Alcott even, like, drew that out intentionally. Like, initially she had Joe looking at him and being like, oh, he's very old. that was her first reaction to it. And she never, she had to go through the whole process of, like, not comparing him to Lori, who had been her previous, like, the man that she knew the best, and be able to see him for himself and then come to all those realizations. I also, like, now that you're saying that, I'm like, I'm pretty sure Marmy seems super old in this. I don't think Marmy was that old. I'm pretty sure Marmy was maybe, I don't know, she's maybe 40.
When the book starts, yeah.
Yeah. And so Marmy, I always had in my mind, was much older. I mean, by the time the book ends, maybe she's 45.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that the father was much older.
Yeah.
My sense is that the father was much older, not 40.
Yeah.
Which was much more common to have those older husband, younger wife kind of marriage. And and nowadays we look at that with some degree of distaste.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not the case for most of human history.
Yeah.
Including when this book was written.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate that Fred was able to both challenge Joe, like you said, of being able to challenge her in a way that didn't make her shut down, but also like lift up her ideas and fully support her and the stuff that she wanted to do. Like there was no competition in a way that was going to be bad for either of them. It was they could challenge each other, but it was always for the benefit of each other. And you didn't get that really with Joe and Lori. They were like tearing each other down. Joe and Friedrich are just like, they match in the right way.
Mm-hmm. They match in the right way. So I'm glad I reread the book, if only to have finally made peace with that relationship. Okay. We need to talk about one more question. I almost didn't ask this one because we sort of have this unwritten rule that we don't talk about this on our podcast because it tends to create polarizing conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let's do it. Why not? This book is sometimes referred to as a feminist book. What do we think of that? Is this feminist?
Definitions.
Yeah, it depends. It depends.
I love how the volumes just got really low here.
Yeah. I mean, I could see how it can be argued that way. How I view feminism, I don't think it is. But there is this theme of women being very fulfilled in things other than necessarily strictly childhood, marriage and childbearing. Jo wants to do something, like she wants to open this school for boys, and that might rub some people the wrong way. It's women really understanding who they are and knowing themselves and not being completely subservient to anything else. So like I can understand that. It's got like hints of liberation for a woman's mind, of being able to think and be educated and all of those things. So like I kind of get that, but I don't necessarily see it as feminist.
Yeah. So one of the things you also said was like, how does it challenge the womanhood rhetoric of its own time? Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting that I'm also reading right now a book that could not be more different, but is set in, I believe, almost the same time frame as Little Women. Because Little Women is set during the Civil War, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Is that the setting? Okay.
That's when it starts.
So I am also currently reading Gone with the Wind.
Oh. Oh, yes. I've read that one too.
Very different, but also challenging the rhetoric of the woman, but also written at a different time. Like they're set in the same time, but they're written at a different time.
Yeah.
And so I think it's mildly intended to subvert the womanhood ideal of its time. But it doesn't appear that, I mean, either her publishers weren't having it if she wanted to be more strongly subversive with it. But it's pretty mild because indeed she does have three of the girls wrap up by being married women with children.
Yeah.
And the fourth one she just kills off. So
in our day and age, yeah, like the feminism, you would not end up married with children. You would be off being a boss lady somewhere.
I mean, even that, like, but they're still like essentially all conforming to the ideal norm of the day.
Right.
None of them are working outside the home, which whatever, that's fine. Jo helps run this school, which does bring in some income and that sort of thing, but still it's minimal. And so I'm not sure it is I'm not sure it would be received as a feminist if it I would be surprised if it was received as, they didn't even have the term feminist at that time, but
no.
As a feminist book of its day, I don't think it was seen as shocking and defying expectations. Nowadays, to an extent, I think we read more into it nowadays because of the history that we've come through. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that history that we've come through. This book was written, it was published in 1869. Very different era. But really, at the very, very beginning of what we would know as the feminist movement. Mm. Which sort of got jump-started by the pre-Civil War abolitionist movement.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And now we're looking back on at least three waves of feminism and what's come of it and have that different perspective. So it's really hard to judge it on those terms.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to say about this book is that it puts forward my kind of feminism.
Mm.
One that really loves women for all they are and for all that they can be, but that doesn't negate the beauty of marriage and motherhood alongside all those other useful and worthy pursuits.
Yeah.
We don't value Beth less because she doesn't marry.
Mm-hmm.
she is a beloved member of her family and her community who, while she's on her deathbed, is still sewing little presents to drop out the window at school children as they go by. You know, her generosity and her acts of service are as beautiful a picture of womanhood as Meg marrying at age 20 and having twins right away, you know? And I really love the vision this book paints for us of these different kinds of womanhood and how they're all beautiful and valuable, that you can't pigeonhole women really easily.
Yeah.
It's a question I will keep pondering probably when I next read this book, another 10, 15, 20 years from now. But in the meantime, I feel really, we can't answer this question any more easily than we can answer the question, is this a Christian book? But I think that's a good thing. It's a rich book. It's a complex book that doesn't shy away from the complexities of life, and especially the complexities of womanhood. So I'm glad for it. Okay, is there anything else we need to talk about? We have made it through a lot more questions than we normally do at this in these book club conversations.
And I'm glad about it.
Yes.
It was very good.
I guess I've got my book here. Listen closely. We have closed the book on this chonky little beast of a novel.
But have we?
Teaser for our next episode.
Stay tuned. Yes, we have a special treat, and I won't spoil it. But if you like Little Women, and if you like Lutheran ladies, you absolutely need to tune in next week for a separate episode in which to announce our next book club pick. We're not going to announce it here. Normally we do, but I'm sorry.
But it's so much better this way.
You'll just have to wait. Come back next Friday, same bat time, same bat channel, and we will open the book just a little bit once more, one more time, to do the book club reveal of all book club reveals.
Oh man, it is epic! I can't wait.
It's a whole episode dedicated just to revealing the next book.
It's pretty true. Much. It's so worth it.
Yeah. But it's about
okay. All right. We can't say any more about it, or we're going to say too much.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Sarah, take it away.
Okay. So you can find our book club in the Lutheran Ladies Lounge Facebook group. It's posted as an event, which Rachel will do for the next book to be revealed this summer. The next book club, I believe we said, is July.
July.
July. So the next book club will be in July. We'll get the event posted before then. You just have to RSVP that you're going. And then all of the book club will happen in that book club event. It will be fabulous. You can find all of that in the Ladies Lounge Facebook group. We also post book club questions on the Instagram page after our book club wrap-up episode. So all y'all on Instagram can also participate in the questions. And it's great. I will have all of these questions posted on our Instagram. I normally pick and choose, but I can't pick and choose from these because they're all really good questions. So
they are.
All of that will also be on our Instagram in the next week. You can find all of our episodes at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah/Amy.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Aunt March.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us, too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at KFUO.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.